Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Let's work together to improve your American English and learn about important things at the same time. Today, we hear from some Muslims in New York City who say they are happy that an official spying program has ended. Then, we're off to Thailand, where two reporters have written something that has gotten them into deep trouble with the government. As It Is, from VOA, is on the air. The New York City Police Department has canceled the work of a group that spied on Muslims in their religious centers and community gathering places. The group's purpose was to gather intelligence on possible terrorist plans and plots. It was established in 2003. Michael Bloomberg then served as mayor of New York City. The city's Muslims have long said the police group violated their constitutional rights. They said the police were profiling them, judging whole groups of people based on unfair descriptions of their religion, ethnicity, and race. Maimuna Abdul Hakim is a member of Harlem's Mosque of Islamic Brotherhood and the mother of three children. Like most New York citizens, she believed that the attacks of September 11, 2001 on the U.S. demanded increased protection against terrorism. But she was surprised to learn that the demographics unit of the New York Police Department was using her mosque to secretly gather information. She says she feels better now that the unit's work has ended.
Especially since I've been here my whole life, and I have children who come here, and, you know, not knowing who these people are. We're kind of like a close community, so it puts my guard up. So I'm happy to hear that. It's about time.
Abdul Sabir is a religious Muslim who cleans the mosque. He also welcomes the closing of the demographics unit.
I'm very relieved. They are starting to see that we are very peaceful people. There's no need to really spy on us. Islam stands for peace.
Imam Al-Hajj Talib Abdur al-Rashid is president of the Islamic Leadership Council of Metropolitan New York. He says the city's Muslim religious leadership deeply distrusts New York City's former police commissioner, Raymond Kelly. He says many leaders have tried continually over the years to have good relations with the police department, called the NYPD. But he said many have expressed anger that the police spied on them all the time they worked closely with Mr. Kelly. The imam said there was a feeling that the police had used the leaders and the mosque to get information. And he said the spying did not find any terrorist plots.
And as you know, the NYPD surveillance program did not turn up one single lead. And all of that looking and all of that spying on people.
But the imam says he now feels hopeful that the current New York mayor, Bill de Blasio, has ended intelligence gathering by the demographics unit. He took note of the mayor's promise to work to end religious, ethnic, and racial profiling, and the fact that he has been in office a short time. Still, the imam says he is unsure how Mayor de Blasio's action will develop into public policy.
There's a real challenge to come up with a 21st century model of policing for New York City, one that ensures public safety without violating people's civil and human rights.
The imam said public officials get paid to meet such goals. Muslim community activists note promises of the mayor's office and the police to build trust. But the activists also say that true healing can come only when they feel satisfied that no city agency or officials will do official profiling. And, for their part, officials continue to repeat their promises to do everything necessary and legal to protect all New York citizens from terrorism. Two reporters in Thailand are facing criminal charges for publishing a story about Thai security forces. The story said Thai forces were involved in moving or trafficking Rohingya Muslims from Burma. The story was first produced by Reuters News Agency. It won a Pulitzer Prize for international reporting for its coverage of the Rohingya issue. Media observers consider the case a test for media freedom in Thailand. Mario Ritter tells us more.
Thai reporter Chudima Sidisathian and Australian editor Alan Morrison face charges brought by the Royal Thai Navy. The charges include criminal defamation or harmful misrepresentation and breaking Thailand's Computer Crimes Act. The two have reported for a long time on the situation of the Rohingya minority in Burma. Their work appeared on the online news service Phuket One. Alan Morrison is a former newspaper editor in Melbourne, Australia. He established the website more than 5 years ago. Mr. Morrison says the charges are questionable and appear aimed at the reporter Chudima Sidisathian. She assisted other reporters, including those from Reuters, on the story. Last July, Chudima Sidisathian and Alan Morrison published a news story that included some material from Reuters. It said some naval security forces worked with traffickers for profit as many Rohingya were fleeing Burma. Outbreaks of ethnic conflict in recent years have led to thousands of Rohingya fleeing Burma, often by boat. The group is an ethnic minority denied citizenship in Burma. Last week, Reuters won a Pulitzer Prize for a series of stories about the struggle of many Rohingya to leave Burma and find refuge in other countries. The report accused Thai naval forces and police of cooperating with human traffickers to send the Rohingya to jungle camps until their families can pay to free them. Alan Morrison criticized the case against Chudima Sidisathian. He also praised Reuters for its award. But he said the news agency had failed to support the Phuket One service in the case. London-based Reuters has not commented on the charges against the two reporters. The Royal Thai Navy has not acted against Reuters. Alan Morrison blames a mistranslation of the English-language report published in Phuket One. He says the Thai Navy's legal action is an attempt to close down the website because of its coverage of the Rohingya over several years.
This is all about one paragraph from Reuters that has been mistranslated by the Royal Thai Navy. It's a paragraph in which the Royal Thai Navy wasn't mentioned in the original English version, yet in the Thai version that was presented to police, the Royal Thai Navy is mentioned three times.
Both reporters have received the support of many groups, including the International Commission of Jurists, UN Rights Groups, and Thailand's Human Rights Commission. Human Rights Watch Deputy Asia Director Phil Robertson says the Royal Thai Navy appears to be seeking to pressure Phuket One. Both reporters could face 5 years in prison for computer crimes charges and 2 years for the defamation charges. The media freedom group Reporters Without Borders rates media freedom in countries around the world. Its World Press Freedom Index places Thailand at a rank of 130 out of 180 countries. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thank you for spending some time with us. More Learning English programs are just seconds away, and world news follows at the beginning of the hour.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. The United Nations reports that more than 3.3 million people are now experiencing food insecurity in Sudan. That number is expected to rise in the next several months to 4 million. About 11% of the country's estimated 34 million people would be affected by the rise. The UN Food and Agriculture Agency, or FAO, says fighting, displacement, and poor harvests prevent many people from receiving food. Roseanne Markasich represents the FAO in Sudan. She is shocked by the size of the crisis.
The numbers are quite astonishing.
Ms. Markasich says Sudan is facing what she calls an early lean season.
When the harvest is finished and the amount of locally available food is diminished, that's what the lean season is.
She says food support is needed in millions of Sudanese homes for several reasons. She notes the conflicts in Blue Nile and southern Kordofan states, and especially in Darfur. Huge numbers of people have fled the violence. About 380,000 people were displaced in 2013. Ms. Markasich says already this year, 280,000 people have fled their homes in Darfur. Also, permanent and traveling planters and animal farmers sometimes fight for resources. And weather can be a major barrier to food security. Long, extremely dry periods are followed by floods.
So it's really a human disaster and natural disaster, a combination of the two.
Low food supplies in parts of Sudan have caused a sudden rise in food prices. Meat prices, for example, are up 84%. Vegetable prices have risen by 40%. In addition, the cost of transporting food has increased by 70%. Conflict in neighboring South Sudan makes the food situation more difficult. Refugees continue to cross the border and enter camps in Sudan. The FAO official says it is very important to continue to provide these people with seeds and farm supplies. Help is also needed for communities around the camps and for the refugees who return home.
And they're returning to nothing. So these people need to have seeds and tools so that they can plant and have a harvest.
Ms. Markasich says thousands of metric tons of seed are required, and farmers need almost 1 million agricultural tools. And that's the Agriculture Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Katie Wee.
from VOA Learning English. This is Science in the News. Today, we tell about an American farmer and an unusual device he developed. For 20 years, people around the world have been buying his invention.
Blake Wisnant and his family are farmers. They live in the American state of Florida. For nearly 100 years, Mr. Wisnant's family has grown fruits and vegetables and sold them to businesses around the world. The warm weather in central Florida is good for growing crops, especially tomatoes. That is what he grows the most of on his 800 hectares of land. In 1992, Mr. Wisnant had some bad luck. It began to rain, and it rained some more. Nearly 50 centimeters of rain destroyed the tomato crop that year. Blake Wisnant was not a happy farmer.
I just thought there's got to be a better way.
So he began looking to find a way to make sure this never happened again. He wanted to develop a system that would provide water to the plants from below. He thought some kind of cover would keep rain away and the soil warm. He wanted the plants to be grown in a box that would take up little space. He became obsessed with the idea and thought about it day and night.
And I told my wife, before I die, I want to see if I could build me a box above the ground that I could grow tomatoes in.
And after years of work, he knew what to do. He found a company in Pennsylvania that agreed to make the box. It would be made of thick plastic and would be about 1 meter long and half a meter deep. Inside the box would be a plastic tube to pour the water in and a plastic screen with many holes in it. Something like peat moss, but not soil, would be placed in the box on top of the screen, which would hold it above the water in the bottom of the box. A thin plastic cover would fit over the top of the box to keep out rain and harmful insects. Blake called it the Earth Box. Frank DiPaolo is the general manager of the Earthbox Company in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He says that growing vegetables this way, container gardening, some call it, makes it easy for Blake Wisnant and other farmers to quickly solve common growing problems.
When he saw any sort of disease or problems with the plants in the field, one human being could basically go and grab the box and just pull that problem right out of the field before it spread to the other plants.
Frank DiPaolo says normal dirt or soil will not work in this kind of container gardening. Instead, potting mix is used. This is mostly peat moss, with a few things added to help air get to the roots of the plants.
One of its responsibilities is to wick the water up to the plants. When you put a small seedling in, the roots are not deep enough to go into that water reservoir, so we need to bring the water up to the plant.
The box holds about 11 liters of water. There is a small hole in the side to drain out extra moisture and keep from drowning the plants. Since the potting mix soaks up the water, you have to pour more water down the tube every day or so. This kind of container gardening uses much less water than is needed when growing plants in the ground. And it is made so you can never give too much or too little water to the plants.
The plants in the box also need two other things: a small amount of fertilizer and dolomite, a powder-like substance made from limestone. The fertilizer feeds the plants and helps them grow. The dolomite helps to reduce acid in the potting mix. Many farmers say dolomite is the secret to growing good-tasting tomatoes. Dolomite is also a low-cost way to supply calcium to young tomato plants. This helps to protect the plants from a disease known as blossom end rot.
That's where your tomato plant will start setting fruit, and they look beautiful, and you come back a couple of days later, and they've grown to a pretty nice size, and the bottom of the tomato is all black, and they call that blossom end rot.
Before the plants are put in the earth box, there is one more thing that must be done. A thin plastic cover is stretched over the top of the box. If storms should bring large amounts of rain, the cover protects the potting mix, fertilizer, and dolomite inside the box. This cover also keeps weeds and harmful insects out of the box. But there is one other reason that the container must be covered. It is important that the potting mix be kept warm, but not too hot. Frank DiPaolo says you should use either a white or a black cover.
The covers that we ship with the box are black on one side and white on the other. If you live where we live in northeastern Pennsylvania and you want to drive as much heat as you can into the container, we plant the plants with the black side up. Say if you were in Florida where Blake lives, in the summer he'll plant with the white side up. You get about a 15 degree Fahrenheit change in the soil temperature just by using the white side versus the black side.
There also has been some research done using other colors for the box covers. One study found that a red cover produces better results for vegetables like tomatoes and red peppers. Frank DiPaolo says that if you prepare the box correctly, nature will do the rest.
The plants know what they need from a nutritional and a water sense. So if you put the materials within reach of the plant will take what it needs when it needs it.
So, after preparing the box, how many tomato plants do you use? The answer is only two. And why is that?
The reason is those plants are going to get so big that if you were to put three or four or six plants in, they're just going to be crowding each other out, and each plant is going to underperform.
Putting the plants in the box is easy. Blake Wisnant uses a sharp knife to cut a small round hole in the cover. He then uses his hand to take out a small amount of potting mix. He sets the plant into the hole, presses the roots down a bit, and then puts back the handful of potting mix. Many people who have used earth boxes say it is possible to get over 22 kilograms of tomatoes from just two plants. Growing crops in containers is good for the environment. In addition to using less water, little fertilizer is needed, and it all stays in the box. There is no way the chemicals can run off into nearby waterways. The same potting mix can be used for 5 or 6 years. In countries where potting mix is not available or too costly, growers can use coconut core instead. This comes from the outside shell of the coconut, and it is low in cost. Coconut core is also a renewable resource. Each new coconut that grows will provide some core. The peat moss that is used in many potting mixes, however, can take thousands of years to grow. Gardeners can use up peat moss much faster than it can be replaced by nature. Since the EarthBox went on sale in 1994, many people around the world have used them. Other people have made their own vegetable growing boxes. Some use two large plastic containers to make what is known as a global bucket. One bucket has holes in the bottom and sits inside the other bucket. Potting mix, or core, goes into the top bucket, and water goes through a tube into the bottom bucket. A plastic trash bag is then used to cover the top container. Many kinds of fruits and vegetables can be grown in containers like these. Some people think this kind of gardening will be important for people in poor countries where hunger is a problem. A lot of food can be grown in a small space for a small amount of money. The people who make EarthBoxes are interested in educating young people. They have developed a program aimed at teaching science and agriculture to students from their pre-kindergarten years through high school. Using an EarthBox in the classroom, the youngest child learns about seeds, the parts of plants, how gravity affects plants, and the uses of sunflowers. When children first enter elementary school, they learn about water, soil, light, and nutrition. In middle school, they do experiments and collect information. In high school, the students learn how to use mathematics and graphs to better understand what happens when plants grow. The learning program includes written materials for the teachers and students, and it uses an EarthBox in the classroom as a small laboratory for experiments. Molly Philbin is the Education and Community Garden Director for the EarthBox company.
Kids really get engaged in science in the garden, where it's a kind of fun activity, where they're collecting data and seeing how different temperatures will change the amount of water that's needed by a crop. So the science concepts come easily.
Miss that growing food locally in a container helps lower pollution from burning fossil fuels like oil. Often, food travels thousands of kilometers from the farm before it reaches the table at home. A lot of fuel is needed just to deliver the food. Farmers who use growing boxes do not have to plow the land before they plant crops. That saves on the cost of fuel and on the pollution from farm machinery. The man who started it all, Blake Wisnant, still lives near his farm in Florida. Health problems and age, he is over 80, now keep him from working in the fields. But he still goes to the EarthBox store nearly every day and enjoys teaching classes about agriculture to visitors. He says he likes the idea of passing along his knowledge to the next generation. Helping to educate the children, Blake says, has been a blessing.
This Science in the News was written, read, and produced by Jim Tedder. Join us again next week for more news about science on the Voice of America. I'm Christopher Cruz.